Have you ever watched a loaf of bread dough rise? Well, I haven't. It takes forever. It's kind of like watching a pot of water boil. They say a watch pot never boils. I mean, it can take from 45 minutes to over an hour. Now, I've come in and checked on bread rising, but I've never sat in front of it and watched it rise. So depending upon the type dough it is, the type wheat, the type of leaven you're using, it can take differing amounts of time. And when you look at that dough, when it's risen, you don't see the leaven in it. You see the results of the leaven. You see how it's changed that bread, how it's made it different than what it started out as. But you don't see the leaven itself. You can tear that dough apart, and you will not see the leaven. But you will see the results of the leaven. You can flatten it totally out, take away that evidence, those bubbles that become part of it, because part of the bread, because of the leavening. You know, and if you bake that bread when it's all puffed up and you put it in that pan, it's puffed up, you put it in the oven, you bake it, and you bring it out and you slice off that piece of nice warm bread, again, you see the evidence of the leaven inside of it, what it's done. But you don't see the leaven anymore. You see the evidence of what was there. And that yeast, whatever it is that you used to leaven with, it totally transforms that dough into something that's enjoyable to eat. It changes what it is. If you looked at that bread, never had bread, let's say, and you looked at it from the outside, you'd think, oh, that must be hard. But it's nice and fluffy inside. What I'd like to do is turn to Luke 12. So we're going to talk about leaven today. Luke 12. Because Jesus warned the disciples here in Luke 12 about the leaven of the Pharisees and told them to beware of it and avoid it. Because just like the leaven that you use in dough, it's from inside and it changes what's inside. And we're going to go ahead and take a look at the leaven of the Pharisees, and we're going to see, would we recognize it? Do we recognize leavening of the Pharisees? You know, that leaven, as I mentioned before, the yeast that's in that dough as it rises, it brings much of the character to that bread. It changes that dough and gives it a kind of character. And different types of yeast will give bread a different character. If you use sourdough yeast or sourdough starter, that bread will taste differently than if you use various other types of yeast or starters. Luke 12, beginning in verse 1. It says, in the meantime, when an innumerable multitude of people had gathered together so that they trampled one another. So we have a huge gathering going on here. People are trampling one another. And if we had looked at the previous chapter, we would have seen that this is coming at a time when Jesus had actually scolded the Pharisees and the scribes about them wanting to be in front of everybody. They wanted the chief seats of the synagogues. But then Jesus had told them that they were like whitewashed tombs. Inside, they looked pretty on the outside, but inside, they were, you know, bad. There was death inside them. And that's where we come into this verse 1. It's that multitude that had just heard this. And then continuing, he began to say to his disciples, first of all, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, nor hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have spoken in the dark will be heard in the light, and what you have spoken in the ear, in the inner rooms, or whispered, will be proclaimed on the housetop. So we see here, Christ is saying there's this sin of hypocrisy, the leaven of hypocrisy that they were supposed to be beware of, careful of. But you know, as we read more about the hypocrisy or the sin of leaven, we find that there are other things that were the leaven of the Pharisees. One of those was doctrine, their doctrine. Christ actually talked about as part of their leaven. If we go to Matthew 16, we see where we find this about the leaven, that is doctrine. What had happened here is Jesus had talked for a while, and they came to a point where they wanted to eat, and there was no bread. And Jesus says, take heed and beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees. But the disciples thought he was just chastising them because they hadn't brought bread. But let's take a look as Jesus speaks more here. Matthew 16, verse 11 says, how is it you do not understand that I did not speak of you concerning bread? Because as I said, they thought Jesus was just telling them, hey, you should have brought bread. But he says, but beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and Sadducees. Verse 12, then they understood that he did not tell them to beware of the leaven of bread, but of the doctrine of the Pharisees and Sadducees. So he was really talking to them about this doctrine that the Pharisees and Sadducees had. And he was bringing it in the context, though, of leavening. You see, the Pharisees and Sadducees had all kinds of doctrines and beliefs that Jesus called leavening. They had added a lot of rules to the Bible, to what the Bible said was to be done. The Pharisees and the Sadducees had put these rules on the Jewish population. And they had actually become difficult to keep because there were so many rules. When you look into it, it's interesting. The Bible.org, it says the Pharisees had developed a system of 613 laws that they added upon the laws of the Bible. Of those, 365 were negative commands and 248 were positive laws. And then in addition to those 613 doctrines that they had put on these people, they had created over 1,500 what they called fence laws. And think of it like a fence. These fences were supposed to keep the Jews from doing wrong things. They would keep them from getting close to sinning, to breaking the laws. So you see things like, how far can you travel on the Sabbath? Well, you weren't supposed to work on the Sabbath. But as a fence law, you could only walk so far on the Sabbath. You could only carry so much on the Sabbath. They had all these fence laws that were meant to protect them, but actually added a lot of burden to them. Today, we're not going to focus on this leaven of the doctrine. We're going to focus on the leaven of hypocrisy. But you know, in many ways, the doctrine came out of the leaven of hypocrisy. Because in many ways, these laws were hypocritical and were meant to be seen as doing good, but it always talked about physical things. It really wasn't doctrines and laws about the heart. And we can see that it actually was negative. These laws were negative. In Matthew 23, which we'll go to later on, but in verse 15, Christ actually said this, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel land and sea to win one proselyte. And when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourself. So they were adding on all of this doctrine, hypocrisy, and actually doing a disfavor to these converts. So I'd like to take a look at the leaven of hypocrisy today and look at several signs that we can look at ourselves and say, do I have the leaven of hypocrisy within me? We can kind of test ourselves as we go down through these statements that Jesus Christ made as we look at things that he made about the leaven of hypocrisy. And the title of my sermon today is, You Might Be a Hypocrite. You might be a hypocrite. I'd like to go through six signs of what Christ talked about as hypocrisy in the Bible. And then let's take a look at them to see if they are things that we are doing. The first sign is, I pretend to be someone I'm not. I pretend to be someone I'm not. If you put on a show just to be honored or seen, you might be a hypocrite. A hypocrite pretends to be someone or something that they aren't. And it's usually to raise themselves up in front of others, to make themselves seem better in front of others, to promote themselves and their stature. It's really the opposite of humility. They want others to notice them, to see them. They want to get noticed for the type of person that at least the outside is showing. But a hypocrite tries to make people think that they are something they aren't. And that's actually where the word comes from. That's actually where the word hypocrite comes from. Hypocrite comes from the Greek word hypocritus. And it refers to somebody who's acting or pretending. And it comes from stage and theater. It comes from the theater. It was a custom of the Greek and Romans stage actors to put on masks. And these masks would, of course, change the look of them, but it could also change their voice and make their voice sound differently. So they were different. They were not who they really were. And they became known as hypocrites, hypocrites, wearing masks. What people saw and heard was not truly the person behind it. And that's where that word came over into the Greek language and into our English language from these actors who were just acting a role. It wasn't who they were inside. Strong's Exhaustive Concordance of the Bible defines the word hypocrite this way. It says the Greek word for hypocritus means an actor under an assumed character. An actor under an assumed character. It's somebody, in effect, who uses a character mask to be something that he isn't. To be seen by others as something that he really isn't. To change his appearance. He's somebody who changes into a mask rather than changing his character, who he is inside or she is inside. He'd rather put on a mask than put on God. You know, Jesus compared the Pharisees to actors who appeared to the Jewish community as righteous and godly men. That's how they wanted to be perceived. Let's go to Matthew 23. We'll begin in verse 25. Matthew 23, beginning in verse 25. We'll read through verse 28. This is their example that was destructive to new converts who were being called. We see here Jesus chastising the Pharisees for the masks that they wore. These hypocrites. It says, verse 25, Matthew 23, Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisees, first cleanse the inside of the cup and dish, that the outside of them may be clean also. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanliness. Verse 28, Even so you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside you are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. Those are strong words from Jesus Christ. These Pharisees appeared righteous on the outside, but they were very Pharisaical on the inside, looking at just the traditions of men and the law, the word of the law. looking at traditions like washing their hands, like it says here, or washing cups. Now, it's good to wash the inside and the outside of a cup. But have you ever put a cup up on, you know, taking it out of the dishwasher, you put it up in the shelf, you take it down later on, nice clean cup, and then you look inside and you go, oh, something's left in there. Well, it looks real nice on the outside, but inside, it's dirty. It's corrupt. You got to wash the inside, which is more important than washing the outside. Pharisees wanted to be seen as pure, as clean, as righteous to society around them. And so they acted that way, and they boasted that way. They put themselves forth that way. But they were hypocritical, because inside they were like whitewashed tombs with bones inside of them. There was death within it, with inside of themselves. Let's take a look at Matthew 7. We'll look at another scripture concerning this. Because the outside doesn't mean a whole lot to God if the inside isn't clean. No matter how well we are dressed outwardly, if inwardly we aren't dressed well, it doesn't mean a whole lot. It's the heart that counts. Matthew 7, we'll begin in verse 15. It says, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing." That's exactly what a hypocrite is. The outside clothing is different than what is in the heart. "But inwardly they are ravenous wolves." Verse 16, "You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits you will know them." So it's what comes from the inside. Now, outwardly, we can show good fruits, even if inwardly we don't possess those. We know the right things to do. We put on the right mask. And then it says, verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" It's the motives within us that is meaningful, that God wants to see. They can't be hypocritical. Our outward side, what we look like on the outside, should be a reflection of who we are inside. And eventually, wolves in sheep's clothing are found out to be exactly that. Eventually, those wolves go after the sheep. But until then, they live a hypocritical life. A second sign of hypocrisy is, I find myself being self-righteous. I find myself being self-righteous. If you find yourself feeling self-righteous, you might be a hypocrite. A hypocrite loves to promote their righteousness in front of everyone. They love to promote it. They love to be seen as righteous. They love to quote the Bible in every conversation you ever have with them. And it's not wrong to quote the Bible. But sometimes people do that, oftentimes they do that to be seen as righteous, to be seen as holy, rather than that's who they really are. It's who they really are inside of them. They want to show off maybe their Bible knowledge, but they're not living it. They want to become and be seen as self-righteous or seen as righteous. We go to Matthew 23 in verse 29, just down just a little bit. Verse 29. Well, we'll go to Matthew 23:29 in verse 30. says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous." Verse 30, and say, "If we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets." These Pharisees are saying that, look, if we'd lived back in that time, we would have been righteous enough to have seen who they were, and we would not have killed them. But yet the greatest of prophets was there before them, and they were going to kill him. But they adorn these monuments of righteousness. They were promoting their own righteousness, and they really didn't see themselves as who they were and what they really were. Let's go to Luke 18. These Pharisees wanted to appear righteous, but in effect, they really weren't looking closely to what was happening in their life at that time. And self-righteousness is a difficult thing for us to see. It's hard to see in that mirror and see self-righteousness in our own self. Luke 18, beginning in verse 9, we see a parable concerning self-righteousness about the Pharisee and the tax collector. And again, we see a Pharisee here. It's purposely a Pharisee, because Christ had talked about their righteousness and their hypocrisy of self-righteousness. Luke 18, verse 9 says, "Also he spoke this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised other." So this is specifically being self-righteous. They trusted in themselves that they were righteous and despised others. And then he goes into the parable, and two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. And as we know, tax collectors were pretty low down in the totem pole of righteous people at that time. They worked for the Romans, and they often used bad methods to be able to get money. In verse 11, the Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, "God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector." And then he goes in to say how righteous he is. "I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess." And then we come to the tax collector, standing afar off, who would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, "Lord, be merciful to me, a sinner." And then Jesus said, verse 14, "I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted." This Pharisee gloated in his righteousness, even to the point where he, I think, was maybe afraid that God didn't notice it. So he's going to tell God, "I fast, and look, I pray, and I tithe. You know, look how good I am. Look how righteous I am." But yet the tax collector, he didn't even feel that he could look up to God. You know, he realized what he was. He was a sinner. He was a sinner before God. Something the Pharisee did not understand. He thought he was righteous before God. And here Jesus Christ connects self-righteousness with humility. If we find ourselves lacking humility, we probably are self-righteous too and have that issue. And if we are self-righteous, we probably do not have humility. And we need to combat these things. We need to look into the spiritual mirror and not have this leaven of hypocrisy, of self-righteousness. A third sign of hypocrisy is thinking this: "I love the praise of people. I love the praise of people." If you do things because you love the praise of others, you might be a hypocrite. If that's the reason you're doing it, if you are serving God to be recognized, you're doing it for the wrong reason. We all enjoy praise. That's not bad. I mean, being commended for things we do, that's not bad. We should be encouraging each other, being thankful for them and praising them for the things which they do. But we shouldn't be shining the light on ourselves and only doing those things because we desire to be praised. Hypocrites spend a lot of time and effort making sure other people see what they do so they can be praised for it. We need to be spending a lot of time doing things in areas where other people don't see us, don't see what we're doing. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians 5:11. 1 Thessalonians 5:11. Because praise isn't bad by itself. But a hypocrite highly values the praise of men, the praise of people. They seek it. They try to find it. They try to put themselves in the right place at the right time so they can have the praise of others. But we should be praising each other. 1 Thessalonians 5:11, I'll actually read it in the NIV version. It says, so encourage, praise each other and build each other up just as you are already doing. So praise is not bad towards other. Matthew 25, verse 21, you don't need to turn there, but that's in the parable of the talents. Jesus speaks of the master who says to his faithful servant, what does he say? Well done, you good and faithful servant. So praise is not bad. God approves of faithfulness and praise and encouragement, but it's when we seek it, our motivation for doing things is to receive the praise of people rather than the praise of God, where we become a hypocrite. Let's go to Matthew 6, verses 5 and 6. Matthew 6, verses 5 and 6. We see Jesus gives instructions about praying to the Father, often called the Lord's Prayer or the model prayer. But he actually introduces this in the context of hypocrisy, of people being hypocritical about how they were praying, people wanting to be seen as they prayed. Matthew 6, verses 5 and 6. It says, and when you pray, you shall not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the corners of the streets, that they may be seen by men. Assuredly, I say to you that they have their reward. But you, when you pray, go into your room, and when you have shut up your door, pray to your Father who is in the secret place, and your Father, the one that we want praise from, your Father who sees in secret will reward you openly. Hypocrites are after the glory and praise of others, of the world. They love to be seen and praised for righteousness' sake. They love to pray to be seen. But of whom? We should be seen of God the Father and Jesus Christ. That's the motivation we should have, not the motivation to be seen by fellow humans. You know, just a couple of verses further down in Matthew 6, we come to a situation of fasting and hypocrisy. If you go down to verses 16 and 18 and look at those, these people would fast and they would put on this horrible face and they wouldn't anoint their head, and you knew they were fasting. They wanted everybody to know how righteous they were, and boy, how hard this was for them. But Christ says, don't do that. When you go out, look like you always do, like you normally do. Have a good countenance, and then God will reward you. God will see it. But if we look like we're going through for great difficulty with fasting and everybody sees that and it's for their viewing, we'll get our praise then. But that's not what God wants us to do. go over to Matthew 23, verse 14. Matthew 23, verse 14. This is back to the topic of prayers and hypocrisy in long, showy prayers. To make you look righteous, to make you look more righteous. Matthew 23, verse 14 says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites." This again is part of that leavening of the Pharisees. "For you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. Therefore you will receive greater condemnation." They would do these long, flowery, great prayers to look more righteous. But they have condemnation from God for what they were doing. They should have been more time spending time with the widows and helping them. You know, what motivates you to prayer and fast and to do godly service? It should be to serve God and not for others to see you and to notice you and to think more highly of you. You know, we need to be making sure we're not just working when the boss is around. We don't just serve when others are around. We need to change our heart and our mind and our motivations so that we serve God and for the praise that God gives us, not for the praise of humans. A fourth sign of hypocrisy is thinking, everybody has so many faults that I need a fix. Everybody has so many faults that I need a fix. Of course, I don't see my own. You know, if you are constantly wanting others to change, you might be a hypocrite. A hypocrite wants to help everybody else with their problems, and they see them with all their problems that they have, and they focus on others' problems rather than focusing on our own problems. We don't look into our own spiritual mirror and say, I need to fix these things. And we all know we have problems. If we look into that spiritual mirror and we say, oh, I look really nice, I don't have any issues, well, the truth isn't in us. That's what 1 John 1:8 says. If we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not within us, is not in us. We all sin, and we continue from time to time to sin. We should ask, of course, God to forgive us. But hypocrites want to fix everybody else's problems. They point out everybody else's problems. Matthew 7. Let's go to Matthew 7. Sometimes they do this out of self-righteousness. Sometimes they do this out of feeling of superiority. And honestly, sometimes they actually do it out of actually trying to help others. But we need to look at ourselves first and not judge others and condemn them. Matthew 7, beginning in verse 1, says, judge. And this word judge here is better translated as condemn. So condemn not. We are supposed to be doing righteous judgment. But we've got to watch it when we condemn things. Condemn not that you be not condemned. For with what judgment you judge, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Verse 3, and why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but you not consider the plank in your own eye? Or how can you say to your brother, let me remove the speck from your eye and look, a plank is in your own eye. Hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. This is the attitude that we need to have, is to look at our own beams in our eyes, and even look at our own specks within our eyes. Jesus warns us not to be hypocritical when it comes to sin, to just look at everybody else's sin and be quick to point them out, but not be quick to point out to ourselves and to God the sin that we have. We need to be focusing on ourselves and fixing our own issues. rather than on others. Because if we see ourselves constantly looking at and looking for the sins in others, we probably are a hypocrite. You know, watch the areas that irritate you. One thing I've grown to, believe, is often the things that bug me are the things I have a problem with myself. If I have a problem with somebody that they're too competitive, well, I probably should look at myself. I might be competitive, and that bothers me. Somebody has a problem with authority. Well, I probably should look at myself. Maybe I'm a very authoritative person. Maybe I'm authoritarian. You know, and other things, make sure we focus on ourselves. Be careful in how we judge others. That doesn't mean we shouldn't be helping others as Christians. We should be brothers and sisters and out of love helping each other, but it's done out of love, out of the right reason, for the right motivations, at the right time. Proverbs 27:6 says this, "Wounds from a sincere friend are better than many kisses from an enemy." In other words, I would rather have a friend of mine say, "Look, I love you, I care for you, you know we're close friends, but I see this problem. You know, is there any way I can help?" But you know, the key word here is, it says a sincere friend. In order to come to your brother, you must first be a friend of theirs. You must first have built a relationship of love and care and of honesty to them. And of course, we should always ask ourselves, what's the motivation? Why are we doing this? To go on to a fifth sign of hypocrisy is if you ask yourself, how can I get around God's law? How can I get around that commandment? You know, one thing that I remember back when I was young, some people used to take a shower and accidentally take a little gulp of water. You know, it was accidental. I was taking my shower. That was getting around the law. Humans do that often. We try to figure out ways, how can I get around the law? An example of that concerning the leavening and the days of unleavened bread is interesting when it comes to Jews and how they got around the law. And Jesus will talk to the Pharisees about them getting around the law. But you know, Jews, according to their law, their interpretation of the law, if they've got a lot of leavening or have this great starter that they love for sourdough, it's okay for them to sell it to a Gentile and then buy it back. That's how they get around the law. Now this is actually, I'll read you this piece from Shabbat.org. It's a Jewish website, contains a lot of wealth about the Jewish religion and their understanding. In an article on 11 facts every Jew should know. So they want people to know this. I mean, they're promoting this. And there are a lot of facts in it. But it references the code of Jewish law of Orech Chaim, on page 448, which states this about leavening during the unleavened bread time, which they called Passover. Now, this is what they state. Not all leavening must be eliminated. If you have large quantities of this eminent contraband, or otherwise do not wish to get rid of it, there is an alternative endorsed by Jewish law: selling your leaven before Passover to a non-Jew and purchasing it back once the holiday is over. This sale is a 100% legally binding transaction and must be conducted by a competent rabbi. All sold leavening must be stored away for the duration of the holiday. So you don't have to get rid of your leaven, just sell it to somebody, you know, a Gentile at work. Sell it to them. I'm not even sure if they had to do anything other than just package it up and put it in a corner of their room. I don't know. I didn't go that deep into it. But hypocrites have mastered the art of figuring out a way to get around God's law and actually feel good about it or feel okay about it. Well, actually, they don't get away with getting around God's law. Of course, we know it's God's law. You can't get around it. You can't find human ways to get around it. Let's go to Matthew 15, because we'll see Jesus calling the Pharisees hypocrites for essentially the very same thing that we see even in our modern day with leavening. But he is talking about using concerning mothers and fathers and the commandment. Matthew 15, beginning in verse 1. We'll read through verse 9. It says, "Then the scribes and Pharisees who were from Jerusalem came to Jesus, saying, 'Why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread.' Verse 3, he answered and said to them, 'Why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition?'" Okay, so the Pharisees come to Jesus and say, look, they're not washing properly, and that is the tradition of the elders. But Jesus comes back and says, look, here's the commandment of God. And we read in verse 4, "For God commanded, saying, honor your father and your mother, and he who curses father and mother, let him be put to death. Verse 5, but you say, whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift to God. Verse 6, then he need not honor his father or mother. Thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition." They had done away with the commandment to honor your father and mother by this tradition of Corban, what's called Corban. They had put this human reasoning and created this tradition that overrode, reinterpreted the fifth commandment. That loophole is a tradition of Jewish law that was put into place. And that tradition allowed a son to call his wealth and earnings Corban. And once it was called Corban, it was dedicated to God. What that allowed that person to do is he made a vow at that point. And he could make that vow at any time in your life. You could do it tomorrow. There was no set time, whenever you wanted. But once you declared something as Corban, it could not be used for your parents. In fact, there was part of the whole Corban law required that you did not use it for your parents. So they could go ahead and say, all my wealth, my house, my earnings, everything that's in the savings account is Corban. But you see, there's a loophole. They can still live off of all of that. So they can still use that Corban to buy a car, to take a vacation, to get food, pay their rent. But the loophole was, if their parents were in need, they couldn't use it for their parents. Now, the other side of this was, at any time, you could end your vow. You could say it's no longer Corban. So after your parents were in need, maybe after they died, you could all of a sudden declare it non-Corban. And you could use it for whatever you wanted at that point. So the Jews at the time of Christ were using that law to keep them from having to take care of their father and their mother. And it was a tradition. And Christ said, you hypocrites, you take your traditions and you allow them to override the commandment of God. You have found a way around the commandment of God, and it's being a hypocrite. Verse 7, it says, "Hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips." That's the hypocrite. But here's what Christ is saying we need to be. "But their heart is far from them." Our heart needs to be changed. "And in vain they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men." So these Jewish people, the Jewish religion, had made their traditions so important that they overrode the law. They were a hypocrite. If you find and try to find ways around God's law, you probably are a hypocrite. A sixth sign, and last one that we'll go over today, is that, as far as hypocrisy, is that you have little place for justice, mercy, and faith. You have little place for justice, mercy, and faith. If you have little room for mercy when somebody offends you, you might be a hypocrite. If you have little room for mercy when somebody offends you, you might be a hypocrite. If you always want those that sin against you to have to pay the maximum penalty, you probably should watch yourself. We desire God to be merciful to us, and we need to be merciful to those who offend us. We need to be willing to forgive, just as God the Father and Jesus Christ are willing to forgive us. Matthew 23, we'll go to verse 23. Because we see a condemnation again by Christ of the Pharisees and their hypocrisy, the leaven of the Pharisees. It says, woe, Matthew 23:23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin and have neglected the weightier matters of the law, justice, mercy, and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. And blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel. So Jesus says, he's telling them they are so meticulous in their tithe paying. Mint leaves aren't that huge. Anise leaves aren't that huge. Cumin is small. Seeds, they're all small. It took a huge amount of time to separate all these out and get down to where you paid every tenth piece of it. And we need to be careful in our tithes and the like. But they were spending so much effort and time in that because it was showy. They could go out and maybe tell people, I'd spent 3 hours yesterday separating out my crop. But yet they didn't show love and care and mercy and justice to their fellow being. And those are the weightier parts of the law. Those are the things of the heart. Those are the things of the inside that changes the character of what we are on the outside. The heart of Jesus' statement here really was the self-righteousness of the Pharisees. They were so self-righteous about making sure that they got every last little piece and probably letting everybody know that they missed out on having love and care and compassion towards their fellow man, their fellow being. While trying to perfectly obey the letter of the law, they were careless in observing the weightier matters of the law, the spiritual side of the law, what God is really looking for. So if we don't show mercy to our wife or our husband, to our employees, to our children, to our fellow Christian, if we don't show forgiveness to those who sin against us, we're missing the weightier matters of the law. If we don't show faith and understanding to those that we have authority over, we're not showing the mercy that we should. We might be blind guides, straining out a gnat, making sure we do everything perfectly by the law, and then totally miss the meaning of the law, which is loving each other, loving our fellow human being, having the mercy and the justice and the faith. Again, we need to carefully keep God's law. But remember, there's a spiritual intent to it that God wants us to learn by doing that law. So if you still find areas that you're hypocritical in, areas that maybe you had to answer yes to some of these, You know, we can grow, we can overcome that leaven of the Pharisees, that leaven of hypocrisy. It's one of the biggest issues about hypocrisy is that it's almost impossible for us to be able to see it in our own selves. But we need to take an offensive tack towards it. You know, and this really comes down to real life, not only our life towards God, but our life towards the world. How many people have been turned off by the hypocrisy of churches? Churches that speak against certain things, and then you find out that they're hypocrites and they're doing these things. So we can't be that way. We truly have to live our lives. Our outward side must be the same as what our inward being is. We need to be careful that we don't follow the Pharisees. Remember what Jesus said about them when talking about the outside world and converts. He said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel land and sea to win one proselyte. And when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourself." We need to be careful that we are not hypocrites and do that to our God the Father, where we don't show the right light to the world. So let's strengthen our relationship with Jesus Christ and God the Father. Ask them to remove hypocrisy from our lives, to remove that beam from our eyes. You know, the wonderful thing is that hypocrisy can, like any other sin, be overridden, overcome, be forgiven. And God is more than willing to help us do that. We just need to ask him. He desires that we become genuine, sincere, unleavened bread. You know, God wants to help us take off the mask of hypocrisy to become genuine, unleavened children of his.